talking Giants football for the next hour, 201-939-4513. And with Week 4 finally in the books, we have a little bit of a better feel of the NFL landscape heading into Week number 5. And Lance, we'll talk a little bit about generally the NFL and where the Giants sit. And, of course, we'll talk about the Giants specifically. We could do a little review still of Giants and Redskins, or that almost a week ago now. And we can look ahead to Giants and Falcons. But, Lance, right now, no 4-0 teams in the league, only two undefeated teams. They were 3-0 because they were on byes last week. So a lot of parity and a lot of things up for grabs. And I don't really think anybody so far has shown to be absolutely dominant where you say, wow, I don't know who's going to beat this team. Yeah, maybe the Seahawks at home, but they were very unimpressive on their in their road game. Everyone else seems to me to have a ton of flaws.
A lot of question marks, a lot of ups and downs across the NFL landscape. You just touched on the Seattle Seahawks, the defending Super Bowl champs, who were roughed up by the Denver Broncos, and that game was even in their own backyard. So the secondary has had some lapses over the course of the early season. The Cardinals and the Bengals are the two teams that have taken care of business. They were on bye this week. They're going to return to the field. Cincinnati's going to have New England. Arizona is going to obviously have an opportunity right to continue to set the tone against the Denver Broncos. So they'll have some tough challenges this week. But if even you look at the NFC East, there's a lot of parity in this division as well. Dallas had a dominating performance against New Orleans, but to start the season, they didn't look good against San Francisco. Philadelphia's offense has been very shaky over the last two games.
Mostly they have not because been, of the offensive line.
Correct. They haven't been able to run the football, yep. So that's been somewhat up and down. The defense has been very up and down as well. And the Washington Redskins, they run the ball well, and they throw the ball well against Philadelphia, and then the Giants dismantle them on Thursday Night Football. So, you know, it's hard to really gauge all of these teams after just four games.
Yeah, the Packers and 49ers, two teams a lot of people thought could challenge the Seahawks to come out of the NFC. They started the season at 1-2. Both saved their seasons last week. The 49ers with really a dominating performance against the Eagles. The only reason Philly even in that game is because of all those return touchdowns in the first half. The Packers had a very good game against the division rival Bears. So both those two teams certainly recovered and played well. The Bears have a lot of flaws. The Saints obviously look like they might be in for a down year like they had
issues
a couple years ago. The Rob Ryan cure from last year, despite the fact their talent, to me, isn't really all that different, they don't have a ton of injuries.
Well, they went out to get Jarris Bird, the Buffalo Bills safety, and they drafted well in the secondary. So, I mean, I thought they brought in enough new faces to be,
right,
if not as good, at least in the same ballpark
well,
as last season.
That's my point, though. They didn't downgrade
no,
their
not
talent
at all. And they didn't
where,
lose anybody that was
right
detrimental to them.
We're going to say this is why the defense is a lot worse. You know, they lost a corner, guys are hurt. You don't see that. They just aren't playing well. You know, the Bucs win their first game of the year. They had a big win in Pittsburgh. It shows you how flawed the Steelers probably are.
Major injuries.
The Ravens have been up and down. I think the Chargers could be a legitimate contender in the AFC West this year. They're playing extremely well. The AFC East is a mess. You have four teams that are all very, very flawed. None of them, I think, are very good. So, you know, the NFL loves to have a lot of teams involved and a lot of teams still in it. At the end of the year, I think we're going to be in store for a season just like that this year, the way the first 4 weeks, with through a quarter of the year, has played out.
And there's nothing bad about that. I
nothing
think that makes for great competitive football down the stretch, and it also allows a number of teams to still be in the running for the division title, as well as a wild card spot. So overall, I personally have no complaints. I think the fact that the AFC and the NFC are somewhat balanced, because as you just went over, there's major question marks all across the place. And as far as the Giants are concerned, just to bring it back to this team, 2-2, with all that went wrong for them over the first 2 weeks, right now, a good position. Not ideal, not great. You're not going to crown them or anything, but you've got Atlanta coming in this week, a banged-up team from an offensive line perspective, from a defensive perspective. They're bottom of the barrel in defending the pass and the run. I mean, we were talking yesterday, John, how this would be a golden opportunity for Rashad Jennings and yeah, Andre Williams to get going. I would also make the argument, I think Eli Manning is going to have a golden opportunity to do some damage. They're missing probably William Moore, their top safety and the centerpiece of their secondary. It's a significant shoulder injury. That's what it's been classified as. If he can't go, this is a very young Falcons secondary. I think Eli's going to have his opportunities this weekend.
Oh, no doubt about it. The Giants have a prime situation here to go 3-2. I'm not saying it's a game you can't lose. The Falcons obviously have a lot of weapons on offense still from Matt Ryan, the Julio
number one
Jones,
offense
the
in the NFL.
White. They can move the football. But at home, against a team that's this banged up front, and everyone knows you win games in the trenches, the Giants should be able to put it all together and beat the Falcons this week. And it really is amazing. Again, folks, I want to stress this. This is not taking anything away from what the Giants have done the last couple of weeks. No Carson Palmer. No Arian Foster. Obviously, RG3 was out. D'Angelo Hall out for the year. And now all these injuries for the Falcons. The Giants have dodged some bullets this year going 2-2.
You have to take advantage of what's on your schedule.
And the Giants have certainly done that.
You can't blame that from that perspective. But to say right now that this team is in place to win the division, to say this team is a lock for a wild card spot, I wouldn't go that far. I think that they have a lot more to prove in the consistency department. See, it's a positive. They've won two games in a row, and the offensive line has looked really good. They've been able to run the ball very well, and Eli Manning is more and more comfortable. He continues to do this. This Giants team is not going to have too many issues on offense, but you want to see it before you all of a sudden jump the gun and say, hey, they've solved all of their issues just after two games.
And in years past, we've seen flashes like this where they look like world beaters. They look fantastic for a couple of weeks, but then you dip back down again. So you're right. You have to see it consistently week in, week out. But the good part of it is right now the arrow's pointing up. The team's improving every week. They're getting better. And if that can continue to go in that direction, this team can challenge for the NFC East. They can challenge for a wild card. But after just four games, two in which they did not play well, two in which they did play well, let's see what they do against the Falcons at home, who are very banged up. If they can put another very good game together, then I think people can start believing. But the real litmus test, Lance, and we'll get to your calls in just a second at 201-939-4513. After this Falcons game at home, two straight road games in the division, at Dallas, at Philadelphia. By then, I bet you a good portion of that Eagles offensive line will probably be back and healthy. Dallas right now is fairly healthy. They lost Morris Claiborne for the year. But frankly, he was playing so terribly, I'm not sure that's necessarily a bad thing for them.
Yeah.
The Bruce Carter injury is something else. He was actually playing pretty well for them. So that could hurt them in the linebacking core. But those, to me, are the two real games here that are going to be test, show-me games for the Giants. I think they should beat Atlanta. If they lose, I think it's a bad loss. They should beat the Falcons with how hurt they are. But those two games on the road in the division, tiebreaker purposes, Dallas, Philly before the bye, those to me are the games that are going to be a big thing for me to judge how real this Giants team is.
By the bye week, you'll know the true identity of this team. They will have played all three divisional teams. They'll be going up against the number one offense in the NFL, the Atlanta Falcons, this weekend. I'd have more substance in my argument by the time the bye comes around to say, okay, we've seen over the course of five games here now what this Giants offense is made of and how good this defense is made of. We're talking about how attractive this matchup, for example, John, this weekend is for the Giants offense. Regardless of how banged up the Atlanta defense is, this is a great test for the Giants defense this week because you're going up against a good running team. The Falcons have turned the corner in the running department. I think Steven Jackson, as well as Jaquizz Rodgers, Anton Smith, have done a nice job balancing the load in the backfield for Atlanta. And Roddy White and Julio Jones are finally healthy. We talked about Devin Hester the other day. They have a variety of different weapons. This, to me, is another great challenge for the Giants' defense, more so than what the offense is going to show you. Because, you know, the defense has the tendency to give up the big plays over the last few games, even though they've been winning. You want to see them try to nip that in the bud over the next few games.
No doubt about it. And I think the first 3 weeks this year, going up against the Lions defensive line, the Texans defensive line, the Cardinals defensive line, was a big test for the Giants offense and their offensive line. But the Redskins, big test for the defense with all their weapons. Kirk Cousins played poorly, but still a lot of weapons on that Redskins offense. Now you deal with the weapons on the Falcons offense. Dallas has one of the best and most balanced offenses in the league.
Great running game.
And so does Philadelphia. So the next 3 weeks, I think, is a real show-me judgment type of scenario for the Giants defense to see exactly how good they are, how good the secondary is, how good that run defense is, and where they're going to be going forward from the defensive end. Because these next 3 weeks, it's as tough as it gets. And when you get back from the bye and you got to deal with the Niners, you got to deal with the Seahawks, guess what? Onus is on the offense to try to score some points there. But the defense is going to be put to the test the next few weeks. Let's see how they do against some of the best offenses in football.
Well, you look at the rankings. Atlanta is number one, as we mentioned. Dallas right now is the eighth best overall offense. And the Philadelphia Eagles are 10th.
Yep. So three top 10 offenses.
Three top 10. There you go. I mean, if that's not a good enough challenge to see how good this defense is, I don't know what it is.
And the Redskins were fourth.
So basically, if you take that into consideration,
four top 10 offenses. So the defense is going to get tested, folks. It should be a lot of fun to see how they do. 201-939-4513. Let's go to the phone lines and start out with Drew in Virginia. He's been holding the longest. Drew, what's going on? You got to bring up the phone pot there.
Drew, are you there?
Good morning.
There you go.
Hello?
Hey, now
Drew,
we hear you.
How's everything?
There we go.
All right, yeah, well, what's up with, yeah. Hey, man, first and foremost, man, I agree with you 1,000%, man, about this, the divisional games, man. And, you know, that's really my concern, too, man, which is, you know, how is our defense going to hold up against those offenses? Yeah, if, you know, especially Dallas's, but Philly, you know, if that line doesn't get better, that front line of theirs, the offensive line, we might be able to get in there. But
well, Joe, it's not necessarily get better, it's get healthy. They're missing four of their offensive linemen right now.
Yeah,
if those guys get back,
well,
they're going to get better.
I mean.
Right.
Right, right. So I'm sorry. Yeah, that's what I mean, though. And yeah, you are right, because I can't help but notice how first Washington beat them up, and then San Francisco beat up Philly too. And it was mainly because that offensive line can't protect Foles. But you're right. If we catch Philly with that offensive line intact, yeah, there's no doubt that it's going to be okay. How is our defense going to hold up against those? And Dallas is looking pretty good, especially with that running game. Like you said, they got that balanced attack going on too.
DeMarco Murray's the number one
rusher. You want to talk about a difference between Philly and Dallas? Dallas probably is one of the best offensive lines in the game right now, and they are dominating the line of scrimmage. They're running the football. They're doing a pretty good job of protecting Tony Romo. They struggled a little bit weeks one and two, but that Cowboys offense is as balanced an offense run pass as there is in the league right now.
Well, I saw him the other night against Drew Brees and boys, and I can't deny that. They kind of scare me a little bit. But, you know, I let me ask you this question,
yeah.
Man. When we was putting this defense together, hopefully, I mean, I'm sure we were, but we were putting this defense together for these offense teams, especially in particular Philly, right?
Of course.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, and the defense is looking pretty good, although, yes, you're right, they have these little gaping holes in here every now and then that scares you to death. So, you know, I think that if our defense does what it was designed to do and hold up, and somebody said this a while ago, man, the sum of the parts, I think, is a lot better than the whole. But I think if we can hold up defensively, I think we have a pretty good chance. Hey, man, let me make a rant real quick, and I'm gonna get off the air if you don't mind, man. Did you guys see the Chiefs game last night?
Yeah.
Honestly, I only saw parts of it, but I know it was a dominating effort, and boy, the Patriots don't look right, do they, Drew?
No, they don't, but that's not my point, okay? I want to make a rant, and this goes to Andy Reid, okay? You know, and I love me some football and everything, but I got to tell you right now, you know, Andy Reid definitely needs to go to the school of clock management.
What did he do yesterday?
You're talking about at the end of the first half, right?
Exactly. I mean, really, man. I mean, you know, that's just it's ridiculous and it's laughable. It really is. Now, yeah, granted, they won the game running away and everything. But I tell you right now, Andy Reid is going to cost that team a couple of wins with his clock management. That's just ridiculous for a coach, and it kind of bothered me. And obviously, I'm not even a Chiefs fan, but
I was going to say, boy, it must have really bothered you.
It did, man. I mean, no, it did, because I just hate to see just horrendous coach, and that's just horrendous coaching on Reed's part. And, you know, I mean, that's my biggest gripe I've always had about Reed anyway, is his ridiculous clock management. And
yeah, true. You know, to me, Andy Reid's a better Monday through Saturday coach than he is a Sunday coach. I think his game plans and game prep are excellent, but I think some of his game management problems have come up from time to time. I agree with you. I think that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand how he's a head coach, but how, you know, hey, that's them and they have to deal with him. Then the other thing, man, is the flag that they threw on Hussein Abdullah.
Abdullah was praying. And they called him for unsportsmanlike conduct. Yeah, the league actually came out and they apologized for that.
No, but remember, the flag wasn't thrown because of the prayer. The flag was thrown because he slid.
And you can't
go to your knees in celebration, and the slide's not part of the prayer. So if you go to your knees and pray, it's actually in the rule book. You're allowed, after a touchdown, to spike the ball, go to a knee, and say a prayer. That's legal. There's nothing wrong with that. You should not get flagged for that. But you can't go to your knees and slide as part of your celebration. One of the rules they have, Drew, you cannot leave your feet and go to your knees or go to the ground to celebrate. That's part of the rules, except in a prayer. So they're not throwing the flag for the prayer. They're throwing the flag for the slide, which went into the prayer.
I understand that, and first and foremost, yes, you are correct. He was flagged for sliding and going into the slide in prayer. We're going into the slide. I that's what the flag was for.
Right.
Now, first and foremost, okay, I understand, you know, the letter of the law. And my point is this. First and foremost, I didn't even know anything about that. It was a prayer. But my point was this. We've seen far worse celebrations than that. Okay, the guy slides and he goes down. It's peaceful. It's graceful. Again, I have no idea that he was praying. I didn't even know it was a prayer. But my point is, what he just looking at on the field at what he did not deserve a flag. My
yeah, but Joe, you don't. Yeah, but go ahead, finish up.
I think the NFL is just going overboard with some of these flags. Is my whole.
Well,
point.
Ever since Chad right, Johnson and his antics, I mean, they've always been crazy.
Thanks for the call, bud.
All right, bro.
Thanks,
all right, Drew.
And here's the thing: the NFL, though, they can't have the referees out there deciding. Well, that looked like fun, but it was offensive. This one looked offensive, but it was really fun. So we're not going to throw the flag this one. Got to throw the flag on that one. They had to draw a line in the sand. So their line in the sand was you cannot go to your knees or go to the ground to celebrate. And it's a black and white rule that everybody knows, and they call it on everybody. If you go down, whether or not you're doing the worm or whatever you're doing on the ground, you can't do it. All you can do is go down to one knee and say a prayer. Everything else in terms of leaving your feet is illegal. So they know that. I don't get why this is a controversy.
Well, however, he does have a track record of being of the Muslim faith, and they know that he's done that before. So, I mean, I'm watching the video right here. I mean, I understand he slid. To me, that was nothing. I mean, that really is being nitpicky, and I'm watching the video as we talk.
No, but
right
Lance,
here.
If it's a letter of the law, you can't say, well, sliding is okay here and sliding's not okay there.
Well,
he would have spiked the ball, went down to his knees, and prayed without the slide, they wouldn't have thrown the flag.
Well, the bottom line is it didn't impact the outcome of the game.
Right.
And, I mean, we're sitting here really arguing a meaningless play in the
right.
long run. They were absolutely dominating them. And on that play, too, Tom Brady was hit. So that was another reason why I thought perhaps they threw the flag at the time, because on the return, Brady is knocked out cold. Obviously, he got back up. Here's the replay that we're watching right now. Brady is shoved aside.
Boy, he wanted no part of that tackle,
didn't
he?
Well, the bottom line is he was in the vicinity of the play, so I'm not necessarily arguing with the Chiefs for trying to block him out. It wasn't like Chris Baker with the Redskins and the Eagles the other week. I just think it gets very nitpicky in terms of how they classify these celebrations. The bottom line
is but it's not nitpicky. It's black and white. It's not nitpicky.
Impacting
he left his feet. He went to his knees, and he slid. That's a penalty every single time.
I've seen people do far worse. And sometimes it gets by.
Not on the ground.
Well, no, not on the ground. But
so it's a rule. It's not nitpicky. That's the rule.
I would still say that it's all in the interpretation of the official,
no,
regardless of what the rules say, though.
But
it is, though.
But don't
but
people...
a lot is interpretation in this league. Same
but
thing
that, but that's not. They've purposely taken interpretation out of that rule.
Well,
so they take the onus off. All I ever heard people complain about, the referees are too involved in the game. Now they have a black and white rule that they have to follow, and now people complain about that. I don't know what anybody wants anymore.
I listen, as far as I'm concerned, they should always be able to celebrate. Who cares?
I don't care either.
A celebration's a celebration.
I agree.
At the end
of
the day, it's not
going
to do anything.
Group celebrations, do whatever you want.
It's not taking anything away from the game.
But if the rule's on the book, the rule's on the book. You have to follow it.
But the league
We're
did
a nation
come out.
Of laws,
the league, listen, the league came out and clarified saying they shouldn't have penalized them. That's what they came out today and they said. So maybe they'll relook at how the language is written regarding the sliding. Anytime there's controversy in the NFL, that always tweaks and changes the law.
I don't think the NFL believes they're in a good position now to fight anything, to be quite honest.
That could be
based
a
on
possibility.
Other off-the-field
well,
issues.
Based on the culture of the situation. But I have a feeling that this is going to be one of the things they'll look at the owners' meetings if there's
All I know
issues
is that
have arisen.
When they made those rules and we had the video from the officials, they made the point that we will not penalize people for saying a prayer. It doesn't matter what faith you are. They will not penalize for that. But I get why the official, before he went into the prairie, sees him slide.
I
understand why they would throw the flag. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, personally, I'm not losing sleep over it, but I wouldn't be surprised if they look back at the language this season and determine that they have to change it.
So I don't think they will.
It doesn't necessarily always indicate a slide as a penalty of some sort.
201-939.
I mean, it's minutia as far as I'm concerned.
4513. Let's go to Andrew in Richmond. Andrew, you're up next. What's going on, pal?
Hey, guys, it's been a while.
Good to hear from you, Andrew. How are you?
The new time slot's messing with my schedule, but whatever. I'm glad the show's going so well.
Appreciate it.
I just want to make a quick point about the sliding. So sliding's not allowed, but the hit on Nick Foles is. They're just ruining this game. I mean, and, you know, they have no leverage to do anything about it. All people really want, John, less ref involvement on Sundays and less league involvement. That's it.
What was wrong with the hit on Nick Foles? What was wrong with the hit on Nick Foles?
The one from all last week when he got the Redskins player got ejected.
Yeah, and the NFL said that it was a legal hit and he wasn't going to get a fine for it because it was a legal hit.
Right.
Why is that an illegal hit? The play's active, a return's going back, and Nick Foles isn't paying attention, and he gets hit in the shoulder. Why is that illegal?
Was it a cheap shot?
No, the ball's live.
Was he defending that play?
He was running towards where the interception was being returned, sure. Or jogging, however you want to put it.
Yeah, and he wasn't looking, and the defender plowed into him. And it was a cheap shot on the quarterback, and the NFL has made all these rule changes to protect the quarterback. Yeah, he's allowed to do that. But you can't slide in a celebration. I just think, you know, when you juxtapose the two, it's a little silly.
Oh, no, look, Andrew, I hear you. And look, I happen to agree with Lance. If it was up to me and I was the commissioner, I made all the rules, I would not penalize celebrations. I think it's stupid.
Right.
I think let these guys have fun. I'm all for it. But if the rules are the books, you have to follow it. You know what I'm saying?
And the rule, just to clarify, and Andrew, not to interrupt, I'm reading through a little bit more of the rule book. In terms of celebrations, it prohibits players from celebrating on the ground.
Yes.
But the spokesman for the league wrote in an email Tuesday that the officiating mechanic in this situation is not to flag a player who goes to the ground as part of religious expression. As a result, there should not have been a penalty on the play.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I think if the official, he probably threw the flag on the slide before he saw him go into
Correct.
The prayer. And you obviously can't review that play, and that's why they ended up leaving it where it was.
Player goes to the ground. The instinct is you throw the flag.
Right.
But then you see 2 seconds later he goes into prayer, and you can't flag a guy for going into prayer.
Right.
So it was two forces that essentially contradicted one another that took place in the span of 2 seconds.
I'm sorry, Andrew. I think we're taking you off the point of your call. Go ahead. Sorry about that.
Well, you've laid out the canvas of the next several games beautifully. Your opening monologue was tremendous. You've gone through all the possible issues. I just think, and I was on Redskins radio the other day down here in Virginia, and they let me go on a nice 5-minute rant.
Wow.
I don't want to do the same thing, but my point is the Redskins got overconfident because of who they played. Jacksonville with 10 sacks and then the Houston defense and then the Eagle defense.
Yeah.
Not exactly world beaters.
I think that's fair.
We, in the same point, and they were, you know, they were picked to win that game, by the way. No professional analyst with any sense should have picked the Redskins to win that game with a backup quarterback with the experience that they had, a new head coach who doesn't have the experience that Coughlin has in preparation. All the reasons that callers have been talking about why the Giants could have gone into that game and win handily, they did. You know, hindsight's 20/20. But at the same point, we cannot get overconfident now. We've played Houston. We've played the Redskins with all their various issues. We did take it to them. And we executed our game plan, and everything went in our favor with those two games. But now we're going to run into the teeth of some of these offenses that could really do some damage. We cannot enter into this game as 4.5-point favorites or whatever and say, you know what, we got this. We need to continue our preparation. We need to continue this underdog-type mantra that Dallas clearly has going for them. And we need to just stay the course, prepare hard, and play hard on Sunday.
Now, Andrew, I agree 100%. Think of this, too. You know, you mentioned how it was a blowout against Washington. Everything went right. But still, you go back to the end of the second quarter. The Redskins have the ball down 21-7 in the Giants' red zone. If McBride doesn't pull that ball away from Niles Paul, you could be looking at a one-score game at halftime. So at the same time, it's a blowout. These games can flip back and forth either way very quickly, which is to your point. And I think on your role, I didn't actually hear the interview, but based on some of the quotes he had on Twitter from his interview with Joe and Evan Roberts on WFAN today, you know, I think the confidence is building, but you're right. You can't let that confidence get out of control. You have to stay level here and make sure you do what you did the last 2 weeks to get those wins.
And what were the reasons why the tight ends and the running backs were so glaringly hitting holes in our defense? We need to look at that, whether it's linebacker depth or nickel corner, whoever was involved. And really look at that. You know, I've only been tweeting at you guys for the last month, and occasionally they break through, but it's like this linebacking depth is a huge issue now. And
it's been an issue since the start of the season.
The parade and everything after that win. Look, it's there. You pick your poison in your game plan. We shut down the wide receivers, great. But when we start playing teams like Atlanta and Philadelphia – that have these little scat back type guys, they're going to eat us alive if we don't address this linebacking issue. So, yeah, you pick your poison. If we shut down Julio Jones and Roddy White and everybody else, great. We shut down Ertz and Macklin, we are still going to get eaten alive by a Sproles-type character and a Quiz Rogers-type character who they're becoming more and more popular, and they will kill us if we let them. So this linebacking depth is on my mind. And
well,
you know,
Andrew, what you got to hope,
Andrew, run all over us.
Andrew, what you got to hope is that Beeson gets back. You move McClain back outside. You have Jaquan Williams covering tight ends. And then all of a sudden your linebacking situation looks a lot better. But I also believe, and I said this yesterday, that Beeson's probably going to be dealing with this foot injury the whole year. This is not going to be a deal where it's just going to be good. You know, he's going to have to fight through this thing for most of the season.
And I, you know, Williams is not off the hook. I mean, there were plenty of plays where he knew where the play was going and he just got behind, took a bad angle, got kind of lost in space. So there's no one guy. It's, you know, it's not like we had a couple of good lines. Everybody kind of got exposed there.
Well, the group as a whole has had its issues, Andrew. I mean, I think that's the best way to summarize it. Mark Herzlich's had his issues. Williams has had his issues. McClain's been moved around. That's why if you get Beeson back, at least you can keep the three same linebackers on the field at the same time. They really have yet to do that.
And I could also help getting Devon Kennard back as well.
Yeah.
But we're entering into what I finished with the Redskins was the same thing I want to leave you guys with.
Yeah.
This division is now so darn interesting.
It is.
Dallas, the Eagles, even the Redskins, we're all kind of 2-2, 3-1. This can go any way. Dallas looks good. They were underrated. You know, they each have their own issues. I'm just excited about this season, not only for the Giants' progress, but our whole division. It's just so interesting. And I'm fascinated with football once again, aside from the penalties and all that stuff.
Excellent.
So
wide open division.
Let's go blue.
Yeah.
Let's go blue.
All right, Andrew.
Thanks,
appreciate
Andrew.
The call.
Good
Thanks
call.
So much.
And look, it's going to be a big test for the Giants. They're going to have to clean up their holes. And I one of our guys on Twitter, I think it was David Goodman, that was admonishing us for not giving the Giants enough credit for that win over the Texans. We said that was a very good win over the Texans. They ran the ball extremely well. They dominated the line of scrimmage. Now, granted, the Texans were a terrible run-defending team heading into that game. They've continued to be bad since then in the one game since. So, look, the Texans, you could run the ball on them. The Giants did just that. And Ryan Fitzpatrick's still their quarterback, and they're also missing their top running back in Arian Foster. So, look, the Texans, do I think they're a 3-1 team that's going to make the playoffs? I do not. I think the Texans will fall back to earth. I think they're going to finish 6-10, 7-9, somewhere in that neighborhood. But it was a dominating effort using the formula we've talked about from the Giants this year. They dominated on the run. They won the battle on the line of scrimmage on the other side as well. The Texans did not run the ball particularly well in that game, and that's how the Giants are going to win games going forward. But, again, I think Lance, those two games against the Eagles and the Cowboys, and even this week against Atlanta with those big wide receivers, and Jaquiz Rogers is a very good pass-catching running back. So is Steven Jackson, for that matter. You know, I think this is going to be a very interesting next few weeks for this Giants defense.
Well, you got to beat the teams in your division.
Yeah.
Tom Coughlin's talked about it. We've talked about it year in and year out. The Giants have been 3-3 over the last few seasons. You can't expect to win your division with a .500 record. Getting back to the point about downgrading or not giving the Giants enough credit for their two victories, first of all, you can't classify victories this early in the season, John, because we have no idea what the Texans are going to finish with record-wise. For example, last year they started off 2-0. They lost their final 14 games. So if the Giants hypothetically played the Texans last year and beat them in week 2 or week 3, you'd be like, all right, it's a good win. Then 10 weeks later, you'd be like, well, the Texans weren't a very good football team.
Right,
so how
true.
Am I supposed to give credit to the Giants for beating a Texans team that's 3-1 right now when they could very well lose their next five games?
Heck, and the Cardinals could finish 12-4. And they're like, oh, well,
absolutely.
I understand them losing.
It's extremely premature to do that. You can't classify wins at this
point.
Well,
and that's why even debating schedules and strength of schedule before the season just doesn't make any sense, because teams can go either way at really the flip of a coin.
You look back at the end of the season and you say, you know what, hey, that was a good win for the Giants early on. This team wound up making the playoffs and so forth. For example, the game against the Lions. I mean, right now the Lions look like a good team, but the Lions have a track record of folding in the second half of the season. So who do we know about the Lions based on their track record? For all we know, they could fall apart,
too. Like last year, for example, when the Giants beat the Vikings, well, that's a good win, Adrian Peterson. Then you realize exactly how bad Josh Freeman is, and you're like, well, you know what? The Giants really should have beaten the Vikings in that game. So, you know,
you're right.
You have to wait to see how these teams are before you judge good win, bad win.
If there's even such a thing, guys,
wins are wins. Wins are wins. 201-939-4513. Go back to the phones. Kashawn's down in Maryland. What's going on, Kashawn?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing great.
Hello,
how are you?
Kashawn, what's up?
Good. Talk about the no fun league. I need to be the commissioner of the league. I'll bring it back to how it was in the 70s when you can actually hit people and then not be flagged and celebrate.
You know, because, Sean, here's the thing about it, too. And, you know, people forget this, and fans complain. The reason the NFL changed the celebration rules the way they did, all they had were people complaining, and I'm talking fans, I'm talking people that are in, you know, in the media, celebrities, people in, you know, that are in front of cameras a lot, complaining how NFL players are bad role models because these celebrations are showing people up, and they're being unsportsmanlike. So that's why the NFL made the rules to begin with. They reacted to what other people were saying. So just keep that in mind going forward when people say, oh, the NFL took all the fun of that league. You know why they did? Because people complained about it.
Oh, well, that's too bad because I really miss the olden days of football because it's going towards flag and it's unfortunate. That's why yesterday I was preaching consistency because it's funny how I've been talking to Eagles and Redskins and even Cowboys fans, and nobody wants to give us credit for the Redskin game, even the so-called experts. It's funny. Everybody picked the Redskins to win the game, but then when we beat them now, oh, you beat up on a bad Redskins team. It's like it's always something.
Well, because, Sean, so I don't think it's necessarily beating up on a bad Redskin team. And look, the Redskins were, I think, 3.5-point favorites in that game. So you go into another team's building, you win a game, it's a great win. I don't care how you do it, but you also can't deny that the Redskins, specifically Kirk Cousins, played particularly bad in that game.
I know. I'm just saying it's funny. I was just arguing with, I can go on and on about Steelers fans who, you know the trash talking and stuff, and no one wants to give us credit for the win, but these same people pick the Redskins. So I just feel like that's kind of a contradictory statement, but whatever. I had a few questions. JPP, because of his performance, I would strongly suggest that Jerry Reese, probably by week 10, if he has, you know, 7-8 sacks or so, I think he should probably extend his contract or get that contract done before the next season. And the same is true for Andrew Rowe, because you still want to – I know we're going to have a lot of salary cap money, but you want to try to get JPP and Andrew Rowe before they hit the free agent market. I think that would be a really good idea because, obviously, I think both of them would like to stay in New York.
Well, because, Sean, here's the thing, though. I think you have to – I think Rowe is one thing. You know the type of player Rowe is. I still think we're figuring out what type of player JPP is. Would you want to invest big in JPP, and then he goes the rest of the year, only has a couple of sacks, maybe misses a few games with an injury? He's had a couple of stingers this year already in his shoulder and neck. Wouldn't. I honestly, Rowe I get, and I would not mind signing Rowe long term, extending him. I'm all for that. I would slow the Rowe of JPP a little bit. To me, he's still very inconsistent. He's played better this year, but he's still not looking like that guy from 3 years ago. If you go to JPP, says, "Look, Jason, we want to extend you. We want to make you a long term part of what we're doing here." JPP says, "Great, I want to get paid like a top notch defensive end pass rusher. I want to get paid 5 years, $60 million." I'm not giving him 5 years, $60 million.
Oh,
if I'm the Giants,
I'm
no chance in hell.
Plus, Kershawn, you also need to take into consideration, we talk about this every season, if you're the player and you're the agent, I mean, it really is not beneficial for you to sign an extension right now, especially if you play well down the stretch and you take yourself into the open market,
you can
cash in.
Right.
So, I mean, if I'm JPP and I'm his agent, I'm not basically having the urgency to do that.
Yeah, from the owner, though, from our side, it looks better to try to get someone before they blow up because it could backfire the
other
way. Well, like, you know, JPP can end up exploding, and then, you know, we had a number that is in mind, and now because of his performance, he's kind of, you know, past that number that we wanted to pay him. So it's a 50-50 shot. What about Prince? Is he long-term or is
Well, they picked up his option, so he won't be a free agent after this season. He still has an additional year because they exercised that option. So, I mean, you still want to lock him up, but the urgency factor is not the same as Roland JPP. It's a little different.
Yeah, because, Sean, basically how it works now, when a guy gets drafted, they'll get a 4-year guaranteed contract, right? And then that fifth season, the team basically has an option to sign him to a fifth year. I believe it's unguaranteed money, actually. But they can sign him to a fifth year. I think at an average of the top 20 players at that position or something like that. So I think Prince is on pay scale to make something like $8 or $9 million next year on that 1-year contract.
Okay. And the last thing before I go, well, hopefully I want to keep Prince. I think he's a solid
corner. No, I think so too.
Yeah.
Yeah, solid corner. The reason why, and I was thinking about yesterday, our conversation about what, you know, we want the Giants to win these next few games. The fact that we lost to two NFC teams the first 2 weeks, you really have to start thinking of how that might bite us in the rear end come the end of the year, because what if we can't win the division and, you know, the Cardinals and the Lions, now they have the tiebreaker on us if they have the same record. So now 8-8, 9-7 is really not acceptable for this team. You really want to try to get that 10-6 record so that, be it we don't get the division because maybe Philly or Dallas is 11-5, et cetera, at least we get that wild card. It's worse. I would have
preferred
that we lost two AFC teams instead of two NFC teams because now
that's a good point.
We're in a little bit of a hole.
Well, but keep in mind, the Arizona Cardinals were 10-6 last season, and that wasn't good enough for them to win a tiebreaker. So to say that you need to get to 10 and that's the perfect number, it's really too early to tell. You're right that it hurts to lose the NFC games more so than the AFC games, but you know, right now I couldn't tell you for certainty that 10 wins is automatically going to punch your ticket because there were some teams last year that won 10 games. Even the Giants won 10 games a few years ago, and they didn't make the playoffs.
Well, I can show on bright side too. They are 1-0 in the division, which is the best way to start there. So that Redskin game is actually more important than any of the other three. So the fact that they started 1-0 in the NFC East is very good.
Yeah, so again, like, I just want us to be consistent, show the record. There's still a lot of doubters who don't think we're any damn good. So I just want us to keep performing, keep playing, keep doing well. Humble victory, just like Tom Coughlin said. Let's try to go undefeated 2-1 by this bye and then put ourselves in a good position. And I'll talk to you guys soon. Good to hear from you. And I realized we're all the same age. I remember Lance said that he celebrated a birthday, his big 30. Me too. Okay, so I'll talk to you guys
later. All right,
later.
Kashawn.
Nice,
bye. Happy belated to you as well.
I'm still the old man in the group. That's okay.
Yeah.
By the way, Mikey Angel, at Mikey Angel TV on Twitter, makes a good point. Tell the call the same way we downplay the G-men. And again, I don't think anybody's downplaying the Giants. But the Cowboys' wins have been against the Titans, Rams, and now the Saints. And the Saints aren't a very good road team. So, yeah, the Cowboys haven't had great victories either. Those are three teams. And the Titans and the Rams are probably two of the worst teams in the league.
Well,
that's a fair point.
The Cowboys had to come back from a 21-0 deficit to the St. Louis Rams. The Titans' game was relatively close. And the Saints' team is really in search of its identity.
Right.
Too early to crown anybody at this point.
Nobody knows what any of these teams are.
The argument holds true for any team. It's not just the Giants.
Yeah.
It's a principle that you could take across the landscape. Nobody's crowning even the Arizona Cardinals or the Cincinnati Bengals after a 3-0 start because it could easily flip.
Easily flip. 201-939-4513. Let's go back to the phones. Who's up next? We got Charlie up in Portland, Maine. What's going on, Chuckles?
Here's how things get interesting.
Hey, gentlemen. Hey, this is great. You know, watching you guys and listening to you guys on the phone while I'm waiting to get picked up on call, it's like watching an old kung fu movie with dialogue, you know, from, Japanese old kung fu movies, and you guys are like 10 seconds behind. It's a real trip.
Any other technical issues you'd like to criticize before you get to the phone call?
We got plenty of time to kill. I guess what I was going
to
say about Dallas, you gotta remember, Michael Murray, the running back Murray from Dallas, he's never played a full 16
games. That's a good point, too.
I don't think he's even played 12 games in a year.
I think he played 12 last year.
He might be gone. And you got Romo, who's got a really bad back, and I watched him the other night. Even though he had a fairly decent game, you could still see he's favoring that.
He looked much better than earlier this season, Charlie.
If he ever gets one sack in the wrong place, he's going to be gone for a
while.
I'll
tell you what, though, Len. Romo looked pretty mobile in that game against what I said.
Yeah, you said Len.
I'm sorry. Well,
you don't want to do that to Charlie. He'll have more to complain about.
Well, Len just got put on hold, so I saw Len on the screen. Sorry, Charlie. Yesterday, I thought Romo looked pretty – or Sunday night, rather. I thought Romo looked pretty mobile trying to avoid a couple of those sacks against the Saints.
Yeah, he did. But you could still – I mean, the thing is one hit and that guy's gone. So I'm not worried about Dallas at all, really, to tell you the truth, because I know they got a good offensive line. That's one thing they do have. But other than that, I think their defense is totally suspect.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not worried about them. And Philly, you know, like you said, Philly's got offensive line problems. And Foles is playing like he should have played last year. He was never going to play like he did last year. I mean, that was one of those freak seasons.
Oh, that was a ridiculous season. 27 touchdowns, 2 interceptions.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody thought he was going to repeat those numbers.
So if we take care of our division, which is what we should do, I mean, if we have to lose one of these three games, that's fine. Let's lose to Falcons. I don't care. We need to win our division. And if we can beat Dallas and we can beat Philly, then we're on the right track. So I don't have any problems.
Well,
now,
Charlie, let me just jump in here before I let you continue. Did we lose Charlie here? Is he listening at all?
Our iPad.
We'll let him continue.
Asleep at the wheel. It's a country group because he's always asleep at the wheel. He should have re-signed Eli. He should have re-signed Roll, and he should have re-signed JPP. He could have got him at a good price.
Well, Charlie, how do you know that? How do you know that?
I wanted to do it at that time. But now they're going to have to pay a fortune to Eli because he's having a good year. He's going to have a good year. He knows the offense now. And they're going to have to pay him a ton.
Charlie, let me ask you this, okay? You're the agent for Eli Manning. Who's to say that you want to take whatever the Giants are going to offer you at that time? When anybody calls up and says, Jerry Reese should have locked this guy up. Jerry Reese should have locked that guy up.
Hey, we're going to lowball you. Take the contract we're lowballing you with right now. You're a good agent. Just take the lowball contract. Let's do business. Come on.
The player has to meet halfway. The team could want to bring the player back and give you an extension. Doesn't mean the player wants to do that. Let's not forget about that.
But first of all, you have to at least go to them.
But how do you know? Wait a minute, Charlie. How do you know the Giants didn't do that, though? Charlie, how do you know that the team did not do that, though?
So we're going to give you an offer. So he can hear you.
He's ignoring you. Yeah.
In Eli to come back and say, well, that's not enough, or it is enough, and I'll take it.
Thank you, Charlie. Right? Appreciate the call, my friend. Take it easy, buddy.
Oh, he heard us there.
Yes, he did.
I understand Charlie's point, but nobody has given me an answer with proof that they haven't gone to the player or the agent and at least talked or gauged their interest in a contract extension. It's got to be halfway. Jerry Reese could go to Eli Manning and say, we want to lock you up. And Eli Manning and his reps could say, we're not ready to talk extension. Same thing with JPP and Antro Roll.
Go back to Akeem Nicks. Remember that contract extension the Giants offered him a year before he became a free agent? Hakeem said, that's not enough for me. I want more. I'm going to play another year. I'm going to up my value even more. I'm going free agency. I'm going to get paid. Sometimes that works for a player.
And it works with other teams, too.
Sometimes for a player like Akeem Nicks, it doesn't work. And he settles for a one-year, $3 million contract with the Colts.
Correct, yeah. And now he's going to be a free agent all over again, and he's not going to make nearly as much money because he's behind on the depth chart on Reggie Wayne and Hilton and so forth. So, you know, it's a risky business. Some players want to get the security. Other players want to roll the dice.
And frankly, in my opinion, in the land that is the NFL with injuries, I think security is usually the way to go, to be quite honest with you.
It's not a bad game plan at all.
Enoch is down in Philadelphia. Enoch, what's going on, pal?
How you doing today, sir?
Doing great, Enoch. How are you?
Good. First of all, you know how everybody talk about Belichick like one of the best coach in the NFL?
He is.
I don't understand how Tom Coughlin don't get no credit at all. Every season, people say, oh, yeah, the Giants are this, the Giants is this, the Giants is that. But every time the Patriots lose, everybody wants to put blame, but don't want to put blame on the coach. So I want to see it. This year, if we don't make – say we go 10-6, and then we don't make the playoffs. I don't want to hear nothing about Tom Coughlin didn't do this, Tom Coughlin didn't do that. I want him to get credit as this dude got two Super Bowl rings, and nobody talk about him in the NFL as one of the best coaches at all.
Enoch, you're right. I agree.
I understand.
I'm with you. Enoch, we agree with you. And look, I'm not going to take pot shots at Belichick here. He's been extremely consistent with rotating talent for the better part of a decade. But you're right. I don't think Coughlin gets enough credit. Look, the team has missed the playoffs a couple years. I think that's probably why he doesn't get the type of credit that Belichick gets. They've missed the playoffs 4 to 5 seasons, and I understand that. That being said, look, Tom Coughlin is a good coach. He can coach my team any day. He knows what he's doing, and he gets players to play to their potential. I don't think any Giant fan that's worth his salt will take shots at Tom Coughlin. They know better than that.
Yeah, and I got a few questions. And, like, going into the season, I presented to all my Eagles friends because I live in Philly. I work at the Eagles Stadium. That's my job. I sell hot dogs and stuff.
I got you.
And
man,
I predicted we going to be one of the best teams in that division. Everybody said, oh, yeah, look at what you had last year. We had last year was injuries, and people wasn't making no plays, catching no balls. And then continue this year. Victor Cruz, I think we should win 4-0. That's how I think. If Victor Cruz that ran his game, if he was going to catch all that ball and Ruben Reynolds step up, we was going to be 4-0.
Well, Enoch, look, if the playmakers play like they did last week for the rest of the year, the Giants have a chance to be very, very good. But we have to see that. Let's see if they can play consistently to that level for the rest of the year. We got to wait and see.
And I got us winning. I don't think I'm going to say that, but I got us winning, going 6-2, going to our bye weekend, and then coming back, winning that Indiana game. And then I think we're going to lose to Seattle, and then after that, we're going to win a couple more games. That's how I see it. So what y'all think about that?
Well, 6-2 means they're going to take care of business in their next three games, and I think they'll take that. I would say 2 out of 3 is more reasonable to assume out of these next three, and you'll be content with that if you're a Giants fan.
I'd be very happy. Very happy with 2 out of the next 3, Inaki. Going to the bye at 4-3, you set yourself up to make a legitimate run of the playoffs the second half of the year. I don't think anything's wrong with that.
That means we got to lose one of this division game, but I don't see us losing one. I don't see us losing the Eagles or the Cowboys coming this week.
Well, Enoch, in fairness, it's hard. I mean, they're playing 3 out of 4 weeks. They're playing 3 of their division rivals on the road. To ask to sweep those 3 games, it's asking a lot. I'm not telling you it's impossible. I'm not telling you it can happen. I'm just saying it's asking a lot.
And my last question, I think Enoch Manning is playing like an MVP right now. If he considering this, it's all he has. Cut down the picks and keep playing like where Eli Manning playing. That ball is coming down fast. I never see Eli Manning play like that since the season. That ball is coming down fast. If he continues playing this, I think we got an MVP on this scene this year. That's how I see it.
Thank you, Enoch. Appreciate the call.
Everybody want to talk about Aaron Rodgers saying this, that, but I want this year, if Eli Manning continues playing like this, everybody should talk about Eli Manning as elite quarterback. I think he's an elite quarterback. That's my favorite quarterback of all time.
Thank you,
Enoch. Appreciate the phone call.
That conversation as elite quarterback this year after this season.
All right, Enoch. Appreciate it.
Elite quarterback I'm not going there either.
I'm not going there.
I don't understand why we always come back to that topic. It makes no difference about the rankings and so forth. All that matters is that Eli Manning plays good football for the sake of the Giants.
And if
it
Eli,
really doesn't matter where he stands.
And if Eli plays like he did the last 2 weeks, the rest of the year, this team's probably going to be in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
Let's be honest.
Protects the football, gets rid of the football, has this offense moving up and down the field, then there's no worries.
And he gets protected, and the receivers make plays, all those things put together. The Giants are going to be very, 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 very good. But here's the trick, folks, and this is the trick. The first 2 weeks, they didn't do it. Next 2 weeks, they did. Which is the real deal? That's what we're going to find out over the next 3 weeks and the rest of the season.
Well, and it's also a telling storyline about what transpired last season. And what were we talking about all last season? Eli Manning didn't have good protection. That's why the interceptions went up and so forth. Was that the main reason? Yes, it was the main reason. Were there other factors? Eli Manning's decision-making, yes. But
talented wide receiver,
correct.
Another.
What we're seeing again this year is the talent around him in the first 2 games did not step up.
Yep.
And he didn't get good protection. Yep. Therefore, Eli did not protect the football, and the offense was not showing any fluidity. What happens in the second 2 games? He gets playmakers around him. The offensive line protects him. All of a sudden, the numbers improve. All of those factors go hand in hand.
Of course they do. Okay, guys, it's a team sport.
Yeah.
It's a team sport. 201-939-4513. We got 4 calls in 12 minutes. Let's get to everybody. Andrew in Easton, Pennsylvania. Andrew, you're up next. What's going on, pal?
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Doing well, Andrew. How are you?
I wanted to jump back on what Kashawn was saying. I agree with the intro role part completely, but I'm not too high on signing JPP. I think he's going to want a lot of money. And, I mean, he has played better this year, but I think – he really only had one great year, and I think between Ayers and Moore, hopefully they get it together this year, and it'll be all right if he wants too much money that we let him go.
Well, Andrew, remember this too. Even if you like him, he has a good year, and you don't want to commit to him long term, you can always just throw the franchise tag on. You have him for one more year, see if he can repeat a good performance this year, and then you make a decision next offseason. So you have lots of options with JPP right now.
And how much would it cost if they franchised him next year?
I would probably say somewhere between $10 to $12 million.
Okay. Yeah, because I definitely think
Sounds about right? Yeah, the average of the top defensive ends of the league. I try to look that up.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Andrew.
Yeah, we need to keep Antrell Roll. I mean, even when Antrell Roll is older than he is now, I think he should still be on the team, even if he's not playing as much, not that that's right now, like Jerome Bettis or Darryl Green, because just the voice alone, he is the leader of the defense. But to move on from that, I was more curious, hypothetically speaking, if Odell Beckham was 110% healthy today, for whatever reason, next man up, if there was an injury or a lot of drops, who would go in against Atlanta? Would it be Washington or Odell Beckham Jr., next man on the chart?
Ooh. Does Odell Beckham Jr. get 3 full days of practice Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday?
Yeah, with that, yes.
You know what? That's a good question. I think it's probably Beckham, but in my opinion, Andrew, who probably only have a small package of plays that they're comfortable using him because of his lack of practice. So I think you would probably see both guys depending on the situation.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Because I was just curious, because I know he's the big light 'em up guy,
right?
And or hopefully, and Corey Washington's the undrafted free agent, and they're both rookies. And when it comes down, Coughlin usually wants practice, and I really don't care which one they put in. I'm torn on it myself. I was just curious what direction you would think they'd go in, because Washington's been with the team for, say, 9 weeks, full practice, where Odell Beckham has not.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll try to get Odell Beckham out there, but it goes back to the fact that even if he does practice 3 straight days in a row, and even Eli talked about this the other day, Andrew, they need more work together. I mean, they're yet to be on the same page because he's barely practiced. So, I mean, I think that would give the slight edge to Corey Washington as of right now, and that would probably change as the weeks go along.
And, Andrew, I think one telling thing that Eli said yesterday, they're talking about, well, what type of player can Beckham be if he plays? He goes, you know, from what I've seen, which isn't a lot, as we all know, you know, he seems to be pretty explosive. He has a good burst. And then he goes, and, you know, from what I've heard, he's a pretty polished route runner. So Eli's still going on hearsay here.
Yeah.
He hasn't even seen enough of practice to know exactly what Beckham is, and that's what the problem is.
So there's no chemistry yet, is what you're
saying. Absolutely.
Yeah. He hasn't thrown to him. You can't have chemistry if you don't throw to the guy.
Yep, I hear you. I agree also. I mean, I think somebody said it earlier in the week. If there's no problems with the same idea of the offensive line, why mess it up at all? You know, why change things if it's not broken just to put a name out there?
Well, they could use an additional playmaker on offense. So, I mean, I don't think it's going to disrupt the chemistry if they throw Odell Beckham Jr. out there. But I'm not for all of a sudden throwing him out there and having him run X amount of snaps as like a starter when he hasn't really had much practice time with Eli Manning, because that's going to lead to – you know, anticipating where he's at, the timing of the routes could be off, and that'll lead to turnovers, and you don't want to put anyone in that position at this point.
Now, also, assuming that he's healthy, do you think we'll see some end-arounds out of him?
Immediately, I wouldn't go that far. Maybe down the road. Listen, the potential is through the roof for Odell Beckham at the end of the day, Andrew, but I don't see them all of a sudden digging deep into their bag of tricks right away. I think the goal is get him out on the football field and let him get comfortable with the full speed of the NFL before you get creative with him. You're not in a position, you don't have the luxury to do that right now.
Okay. All right, guys. Well, that's all I got for today. Good show. Thanks.
All right, appreciate that.
Appreciate
one
it.
Other quick fact that I wanted to throw out. The franchise tag for defensive ends last season was just over 13
million.
Wow,
13. So yeah. I actually undershot it a little bit. I thought I was a little high on that.
So that should just give you the ballpark if the Giants went down that route and they wound up franchise tagging JPP. If that's the number for 2014, remember, the number usually goes up each year, so it could be even more than $13 million you have to give to JPP for that one season under the franchise tag.
201-939-4513. Let's go back to the phones and say what's up to Len in Maryland. Len, you're up next. What's going on, pal?
Hey, guys. How you doing? It's been a while since I've talked to you.
Yeah, Len, good to hear from you. How are you?
Time.
And we've had a couple of wins, I think, since the last time we talked.
So why the hell are you calling us, Len?
Especially the win against Washington. Huh?
Yeah.
Division win on the road. You know, that's how you get off to 3-3 in the division.
That's true. You're right.
You win one of these games, you know, on the road, and you know you're looking at 4-2, and it's just, you know, it's a big difference in the division, 4-2 to 3-3, and so that was an important one. And gee, to have the road division games out of the way by game 7, wow.
Len, that's a good thing as long as you win them.
yeah. Well, we got one, and we're on our way, and you know, we got Eli, you know, adapting here like everybody thought he would, and you know, moving forward. You know, Eli is Eli. The good news is he's our Eli, and you know, as soon as he steps on the field, we got a chance, guys. I've thought that for like, you know, 7-8 years anyway. As soon as he steps on the field, the Giants have a good chance of winning a game. So, you know, I'm feeling pretty good. You know, with JPP, you know, if he gets some sacks in these division games, I mean, that's the kind of thing you look at. I mean, we got to beat Dallas. We got to beat Philadelphia, not necessarily in 2 weeks, but, I mean, we have to play well against them. But, you know, over the years, you know, the 3-3 is pretty good. No,
it is.
We played well in the division. We have some guys who play well in the division, and I think that's the kind of guys you want to keep on your team.
Though, Len, I will say this. I think this week, JPP can, you know, can do some damage. You got a rookie, Jake Matthews, at a left tackle. But against Dallas and Philly, those are two of the best left tackles in the league now.
Boy.
So those are
going to
be some tough tests for JPP.
And while Trent Williams was in the game the other night, I don't want to say it was, you know, a standstill. But, you know, he wasn't JPP did all right the other night, but he wasn't dominating. And, again, I think that's the way you have to look at it with him. How does he do against those left tackles in the division, you know, in long term?
Right.
And we have to play J.J. Watt. Get J.J. Watt blocked one time in the next 4 years. You know? On the other hand, we play the Redskins, the Eagles, and the Cowboys, you know, 8 times in the next 4 years. So,
well, in fairness, Len, not many guys are getting around Tyron Smith.
And not many people are getting around Jason Peters.
Yeah.
Not many guys are getting around Trent Williams. These three guys in the division are all excellent left tackles.
Well, if that's the case, do we want to pay him $13 million? I mean, I don't want to make that
decision.
That's
a fair point. No one's arguing that.
I think that's the way we have to look at it. I mean, spend the money elsewhere. Don't spend it on JPP if he's not going to beat those three left tackles. Because those are the key guys. Those are the guys that are in the division. I think game six, I think you guys said it earlier, if you get to game six, you know, we'll have a really good idea about what this team is really all about.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be good. And then if we can get to game 10 and be healthy, because those last six games, it's just, you know, survival of the fittest. I mean, the NFL is just...
We have
the Len, I think you made a good point. I know a lot of Giant fans on Twitter and on the phones have gotten mad at Lance and I, and they're like, you guys are downplaying wins. We're not downplaying wins. We're saying what you just said. We're not sure what this team is yet. And I'm not willing, and Lance isn't willing either, to go out there and say, well, we know definitively this is what the Giants are. After four games, two, you know, not-so-good games and two pretty good games. So I'm not willing to say I know what this team is yet. I want to wait and see a little bit. You know what I mean?
Well, absolutely. In fact, every fan base all around the league ought to be saying the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, this has been ridiculous. I mean, the chaos the chaos on Sunday is just amazing from one week to the other. But things around week six, things level off, and the cream begins to rise to the top. And then you got to hope. You know, you get to week – I always think if I can get to week 10 and I look down at the MASH unit and I say, you know, I don't have a lot of guys in there. You know, I'm healthy. I think we can make a run. It's just, you know, it's just chaos in those last 6 weeks. It's you know, who you can put out on the field. Who you can put out on the field. But, you know, we got to be feeling pretty good. I mean, it's just so far – you know, after those first 2 weeks, although the Arizona game, I thought that was one we could have come away with and won. But, you know, let's go beat Atlanta and get ready for those division games. You know, we're pretty healthy.
And it should maintain that way.
I mean, I hope so. I mean, we're really pretty healthy.
They're in good shape. They've gone through some of the injuries early in the season, and now they seem to be okay. Yeah.
If we get the three guys back, I mean, it could be going into those two division games. We got all 53 guys healthy.
All right, Len, we got to run, pal.
Okay, man.
All right, Len,
thanks
for
the call. Appreciate it. All right, final call of the show. We lost Vic down in Tampa. Vic, give us a call back. Next show, we'll get you right back up. Let's go to Lawrence in Florida. He'll close out the show for us this morning. Lawrence, good morning.
Hi, thanks for having me. I just want to, first of all, I just want to say I like that Wheaties box you have. I have the same box.
Yeah, pretty good, right?
I have an autograph by all the Giants that are on the front, except I couldn't get Renee Thompson and Bart Oaks. but besides all that, I like the way the Giants are looking. The offense has these guys back in their heels. I'm just concerned about if they practice what to do after they intercept the ball. I mean, these guys, they intercept the ball, they run backwards, sideways, once they knock the ball.
He's not wrong.
That did happen
a
lot against the Redskins.
You're not wrong.
Smith could have ran and made a touchdown, and he had a block in front of him, and one lineman coming across, go straight. Antoine Well went straight, and he got down to the 2-yard line. These other guys, the third guy, he ran 10 yards backwards.
Well, Lawrence, you're right. Look, these guys on the returns always try to run away from defenders, which oftentimes means trying to run across the field, which in the end never, ever works. And that's why a lot of times punt returners are so hard to find, because a lot of guys don't understand the concept of going north and south. They like to go east and west. And you're right. They did way too much on those returns.
Well, they were all guilty of that. Prince, yeah. Quinton Demps was guilty of that, Antrell Roll. And you know what? I would take it a step further, Lawrence. It's not so much could they, would or should they score a touchdown. Go down, give the offense favorable field position, and the way the offense is performing right now, if you give them the ball in the opponent's territory, they can go 40 to 30 yards. That's not a problem.
Well, that's what I've been trying to say. We got to talk to those backfield guys and just give these guys some pointers and let them know about this thing. Just go straight or go down or go out.
Yeah.
Don't run backwards and go in the middle and the ball gets knocked out.
Well, because you don't want to give up favorable field position. There's no worth in doing that.
All right, Lawrence.
But anyway, thanks for having me.
Thanks, pal.
You got it, Lawrence.
I'll see you next time.
All right, appreciate it.
I want to hit on,
thanks
two,
so much.
Before we say goodbye, Lance, two quick Twitter comments I want to touch on right here because I looked at a couple good ones. Let's see. Mr. Mack makes the point Steve Smith happened the same way, not wanting to accept that that contract extension. He went free agent. He got hurt. Ended up burning him 100%, right? Who will the Giants keep at safety versus the Falcons, Demps or Stevie Brown? That from at HSyed10. I got to imagine Will Demps. I keep saying that.
Combination of both. Isn't that lovely?
Well, Quinton Demps. Will Demps, former Giants safety from like 2008. Quinton Demps will be in there. For the Giants, Joe at JCS02008, do you think Tom Brady is experiencing similar struggles that Eli had last year, poor line, lack of weapons? Absolutely. That's why every quarterback needs those things.
Yeah, the O-line's a big issue for New
England. Our man at Mr. Ruiz NYG, Belichick's a cheater. Did you forget about Spygate? No, we did not, but that doesn't make him any less of a coach. I'm not saying he didn't cheat. He did. But that doesn't mean he's not a very good coach. Saraceno points out that Corey Washington, not a rookie, but he is. He was undrafted this year. This is his first time.
Well, I think I believe that Dave then countered him and gave him a link to a site explaining that it was a rookie.
Okay.
That's his classification.
I missed that part.
Yeah. Well, I'm tracking it somewhat on hashtag Giants chat.
Maybe. We'll see. Anything else you put see that up?
No, that was pretty much I'm glad you got to the Quinton Demps. I was going to bring that up. And I don't think that there's any means for them to bring back Stevie Brown at this point in the starting lineup. Tom Coughlin even mentioned that in his press conference, John, how thrilled he was with the way Quinton Demps played. He was very
thrilled
active.
Might be a little short.
Well, but he was pretty complimentary of him,
though. I've never heard Tom Coughlin use the word thrilled before.
He complimented him, though. When he was asked about Quinton Demps, he threw out a compliment. It wasn't, we'll see what happens with Quinton Demps. He basically said, I was very pleased with Quinton Demps' performance.
Coach Coughlin's very measured in the types of adjectives he uses, and I don't want
to
put thrilled on his
way. He went out of his way, though, to compliment Quinton Demps. I will say that. And he deservedly should say that, because Quinton Demps had a very good performance.
No question about it.
Had one of those six takeaways. Everybody was very
opportunistic
in that game.
We're not the ones saying this, but I can at least quote one of our tweeters. Can you guys please call out all the people on Twitter on the phones that wanted Eli's headed 0-2 and were wanting to start Ryan Nassib? By the way, we did get a lot of those messages and calls, by the way. Just saying. So.
Well, and there were a lot of people also calling for Will Beattie to be benched as well. And that's
nice. They didn't want Will Beattie on the team.
Yeah.
And,
so,
and now he's ranked as the best protecting left tackle in football.
Yet another reason why everybody tends to jump the gun a little too much when it comes to evaluating players and evaluating teams. That's why at 2-2, we're not going to do the same thing.
And patience is tough for fans, but sometimes you have to exercise it. And you're going to have to exercise some patience now, too, because we're not going to be back until noon tomorrow on Giants.com. And
what a beautiful segue.
With Roman Oban, and they will take your calls at 201-939-4513. Then Paul and Roman the following day as we get ready for Giants and Falcons. Coach Coughlin's live press conference at 11 a.m. tomorrow. You can check that out as well. For Lance Meadow, I am John Schmelk. Great job on the phones. Great jobs on Twitter. Enjoy the rest of your day on Giants.com. Have a great one.
Have a good one.